Picture this, three nations, oceans apart, yet crumbling in lockstep. Canada's middle class is drowning in debt and housing costs. The UK's factories are ghosts, its taxes choking what's left. Australia's flooding with newcomers while wages flatline and homes turn to fantasies. Same story, different accents, and across three continents. Stagnation, soaring wealth for the few, and a quiet erosion of what once made them strong. Problems are almost interchangeable, and every time I've covered these countries before, the similarities were uncanny, like the same script copy-pasted across the map. So, how did this happen? More curiously, why does it feel so deliberate? It's not chaos, it's a plan, and it's called managed decline.
Managed decline.
And the good news is this, most people don't want managed decline.
But they are in managed decline.
Managed decline.
Curiously, this has happened before. Let's rewind back to Rome, as you do. If you squint, the parallels are almost unnerving. Rome didn't collapse overnight. It rotted from within, century by century. By the 2nd century AD, Rome's economy was addicted to expansion. Conquer, plunder, repeat. But when the conquest slowed, so did the spoils. To keep the elite rich, they turned inward. Massive estates called latifundia devoured the countryside, worked by endless streams of imported slave labor from Gaul, Britannia, and beyond. Meanwhile, small Roman farmers, the backbone of the Republic, were crushed, pushed off their land, drowned in debt, replaced by cheap foreign hands. By the time of Tiberius and Gaius in the late 2nd century BC, the problem was so severe they tried land reforms to redistribute property back to ordinary Romans. It didn't end well. Both were assassinated by the Senate. The status quo, as always, won. And when Rome's population declined and birth rates dropped, they opened the borders. Not out of charity, but survival. Under Emperor Caracalla in 212 AD, Roman citizenship was extended to nearly every freeman in the empire. The reason? Taxes. Rome needed revenue, and selling citizenship was good business. Soon, the legions themselves, once the pride of Roman citizens, were filled with foederati, foreign mercenaries from the very tribes Rome had once fought. Goths, Vandals, Franks. By the 5th century, generals like Flavius Stilicho, himself of barbarian descent, were running the show. And in 410 AD, when the Visigoths sacked Rome, many of them were former allies who had been on the imperial payroll just years earlier. There's this quote from historian Peter Heather describing late Rome. The affluent lived in slums and survived on handouts, while semi-Romanized Goths defended the frontiers. Vast estates swallowed up the countryside, plebeian farmers were buried in debt, and all the while, the empire collapsed under the weight of its own size. Sound familiar? The concept of managed decline has quietly migrated from the ruins of history into modern policy. Originally, it was a business term. It was used when a company was too far gone to save, so management focused on slowing down the collapse, salvaging what they could, and keeping appearances up on the way down. But it didn't stay in the boardroom for long. By the early 1980s, it entered government strategy. When Liverpool erupted into riots after years of economic decay, Margaret Thatcher's closest advisors floated the idea of abandoning the city to manage decline. Let the industry rot, let the people move, contain the damage, don't waste time on revival. Thatcher ultimately rejected the idea, but the phrase stuck around because quietly, it solves a very inconvenient problem. When the effort required to fix something becomes greater than the political will, managed decline offers an easy way out. Stop trying to save it, just control the collapse. And what began as a tactic for fading cities or dying companies is now happening on a national scale. Canada, the UK, Australia. These are no longer systems anyone in charge seems particularly interested in fixing. Debts climb, industries die, borders stay open. The middle class is squeezed until it vanishes. And instead of turning the ship around, governments are focused on slowing the sinking. Because that's all managed decline really is. A decision. A decision not to save you. A decision to make collapse look orderly. And if you're enjoying this video so far, an actually great decision you could make is to subscribe and give the video a thumbs up. Nowhere is managed decline more apparent than the economy. Take Canada. In the last decade, business investment per worker has fallen by 20%, while productivity has barely budged. Since 2015, Canada's GDP per capita growth has averaged just 0.9% per year. By 2022, it wasn't just lagging, it was dead last among OECD countries. And the response? Rather than fix the underlying rot, Canada has become addicted to importing growth. In 2023 alone, the population surged by over 1.2 million people, the fastest pace since 1957. But nearly all that growth has gone into inflating housing demand and pushing up GDP on paper. In reality, the country's housing stock per person is shrinking, and infrastructure hasn't kept pace. Home prices remain out of reach, real wages are stagnant, and young people are drowning in debt. Across the ocean, the UK has been living in its own economic nightmare. After 2008, the UK's productivity flatlined. From 2008 to 2019, GDP per hour worked grew just 0.3% per year, the slowest rate since the Industrial Revolution. Meanwhile, real wages in 2023 were still lower than in 2008, marking the longest pay stagnation in over 200 years. Investment has dried up. Business investment as a share of GDP lags behind nearly every major economy. And what growth the UK has scraped together? It's come from the same place as Canada. Rapid population increases, with net migration hitting a record 745,000 in 2022. But public services, housing, and infrastructure have been left behind. The NHS is on life support. Housing is scarce and wildly expensive, and the tax burden has reached its highest level since the 1940s. And then there's Australia. Between 2000 and 2020, GDP per capita growth slowed to just 1.1% per year, down from 2.3% in the decades prior. Productivity growth has nearly stalled. And while Australia posts flashy GDP numbers, much of it is built on mining exports and record migration, not genuine economic dynamism. In 2023, Australia's population grew by 660,000 people, the highest number ever recorded. But instead of wealth trickling down, housing prices hit record highs, and rental vacancies dropped below 1%, real wages fell, and infrastructure groaned under the weight of rapid growth. And here's the common thread. In all three countries, business investment per worker is falling, productivity is flatlining, wages are stagnant. But GDP keeps growing. Why is that? Because the population keeps growing. Managed decline is less about falling off a cliff and more about quietly swapping out real, sustainable wealth creation for paper growth. Build less, import more, inflate the numbers. So how did three wealthy, stable nations all end up circling the same drain? It wasn't bad luck or random mismanagement. There's a pattern, and it starts with a shift in priorities. In the late 20th century, Canada, the UK, and Australia made a quiet trade-off. They abandoned a long-term nation building for short-term gains. Instead of investing in industry, infrastructure, or national self-reliance, they handed the reins to finance, real estate, and migration as the primary engines of growth. Why build factories when you can just sell houses to each other at inflated prices? Why invest in homegrown talent when you can import cheaper labor? Why prioritize national prosperity when global capital offers bigger profits elsewhere?
We like to say people kind, not necessarily mankind.
Look at Australia. Its government actively shaped the economy around property speculation with tax breaks like negative gearing and capital gains discounts designed to pump the housing market, even if it priced locals out. In Canada, government-backed mass immigration policies were sold as economic boosters, but behind the scene, they were helping prop up GDP growth and housing demand while wages stagnated. In the UK, the architects of austerity gutted public services while pushing policies that favoured multinational finance over local communities. London's banking sector boomed, northern manufacturing towns withered. At every turn, the same logic applied. Prioritise global markets, maximise short-term profits, and if the people complain, just tell them the economy's growing. But growing for who? Because while the numbers might look good on a spreadsheet, these decisions hollowed out the foundation of prosperity, replacing real, productive economies with financialized bubbles, endless population growth, and mounting inequality. If you've ever played Mortal Kombat, you know the move. The cheap, endless combo you spam when you're getting destroyed just to stay alive. Well, for our government, that combo is mass immigration. When your population stops having kids, when housing costs crush young families, wages stagnate, and a future feels impossible, there's only one way to keep the GDP graphs from flatlining: spam immigration. In Canada, over 1.25 million arrivals in 2023, a number that used to be unthinkable. The plan is to hit 500,000 permanent residents every year, not because the people ask for it, but because the government needs fresh bodies to fill the tax pool. In fact, under the Century Initiative, there is a plan to get that number to 100 million by 2100. Australia, an eye-watering 700,000 people added in just 12 months. Not a single major party wants to slow it down. In fact, the Prime Minister can even be seen dining with people who run ghost colleges that import fake students by the thousands. The UK, net migration sitting at 672,000 last year. Despite years of public pushback, the Prime Minister there finally even admitted that it was all by design.
And found the previous government were running an open borders experiment.
A primary reason for all of this is the collapse of family formation. In Canada, birth rates have collapsed to 1.3 children per woman, the lowest in its history. In Australia, fertility has plunged below 1.6, and internal reports show that without record migration, the economy would shrink. And in the UK, birth rates at 1.5. Can you blame young people for not being able to start a family? Costs are extremely high. The government and the left repeat the message that kids are bad for the planet and that careers and consumerism are life's ultimate goal. But here's the uncomfortable truth. A nation that refuses to build a future for its own people is a nation that's already chosen decline, and the only thing left to do is manage it. Moving beyond the economy, there's one more piece to this puzzle of decline. Because once you've gutted the middle class, driven up housing, crushed wages, and opened the floodgates of immigration to patch over the cracks, you still need to make sure people don't push back. And that's where cultural engineering kicks in. See, if you want to keep a population docile while their living standards evaporate, there's a simple formula. First, you strip away national pride, then you replace it with guilt. In Canada, mass migration has been rebranded as nation building, a moral good in itself, regardless of the strain it puts on housing, healthcare, or wages. As Justin Trudeau bluntly put it, there is no national identity. Canada is the first post-national state. In Australia, the public is bombarded with slogans about welcoming refugees and celebrating diversity, even as wages stagnate and the infrastructure buckles under the weight of record arrivals. Ironically, a growing share of Australians aren't even descended from the original British settlers, but that doesn't stop the endless apologies. And in the UK, any attempt to even define Britishness is met with suspicion. The government's Prevent program, originally designed to catch extremists, now spends its time policing war crimes. Teachers have been referred for questioning traditional gender roles. One of the program's own independent reviewers admitted that Prevent has drifted into monitoring mainstream political opinions while missing the real threats. Identity isn't the only thing that gets dissolved. It's the whole foundation of meaning. Family, framed as outdated, expensive, and environmentally irresponsible. Christianity, branded as oppressive and bigoted, while governments and institutions bend over backwards for Islam. History, reduced to nothing more than colonial guilt and shame. And if you dare push back on any of this, there's a system for that too. In Australia, there's now a literal e-safety commissioner, basically a minister for truth, tasked with policing online harms, which increasingly means opinion the government doesn't like. Canada's rushing through its own online censorship laws under the guise of preventing harm, while failing infrastructure and hospitals get ignored. And in Britain, the speech police are already out in full force. Under laws against hate incidents, citizens have been arrested for things as simple as social media posts criticizing migration. This concept of managed decline does actually benefit a lot of people. Obviously, it isn't you. The real game is about locking in a system where a tiny elite gets rich off the decay. Start with politicians. For them, Decline is easy money. They don't have to fix the economy or boost productivity. They just massage the numbers. GDP down, flooding more people. Wages stagnant. Doesn't matter if the stock market's up. Housing unaffordable? They've got investment properties to cash out on. In Canada, members of parliament own rental properties while entire generations can't even imagine buying their first home. In Australia, one in three politicians are landlords. The worse things get for you, the better they get for them. But they're not alone. The corporate class thrives in this system. Manufacturing? Shipped offshore for cheap labor years ago. Those local factory jobs? Gone. Replaced with zero-hour contracts and gig work. And because there's always more people arriving to compete, the wages never really climb. The competition keeps the labour costs low and the profits high. In the UK, real wages have barely moved in decades, while energy giants and grocery chains post record profits. Managed decline means just enough survival to keep people working, but never enough to build real wealth. Then there's the landlords and property developers. Shrink the dream of home ownership, crank up demand, and watch the prices soar. Foreign investors scoop up entire neighborhoods, and you're left competing for overpriced shoebox apartments while being told the solution is more development, more construction, more debt. Banks, of course, love it. You can't afford a house, but you can afford a mortgage you'll die with. In Canada, household debt has exploded past 180% of income. In Australia, similar story. Mortgages big enough to choke a horse. And all the while, interest payments just keep flowing up. On top of all of that, the bureaucratic machine grows fatter by the day. Whole industries built on decline. Think tanks, diversity councils, migration agencies, welfare administrators, all managing the fallout while collecting a government paycheck. As public services fall apart, they expand. And a cherry on top, the more fractured, overworked, indebted, and divided a population becomes, the less likely they are to push back. And nobody is pushing back. Perhaps some people lived through what happens in the USA, drowning themselves with large sporting events and Taylor Swift's newest tour. But what right and left-wing governments in these three countries, perhaps even learning from each other, have done is create a system where decline doesn't feel like collapse. It's slow, wrapped up in polite press conferences and predictable talking points. They shuffle the chairs, swap the faces, blame the other side, tweak the slogans. And meanwhile, year after year, things just get worse. Remember, Rome's collapse did not happen in a year or two. It dragged on for centuries, rotting from within while the people carried on, convinced the empire was too big, too important, too permanent to fail. They still filled their arenas, they still paid their taxes, they still told themselves the next emperor might turn it all around. And yet, behind the scenes, the machine was already broken. For the UK, Australia, and Canada, perhaps this fate isn't too far away either. The machine is already breaking. The only question left is how long we keep pretending it isn't. Hey, you made it to the end. If you enjoyed this video, please remember to subscribe and give it a thumbs up. A massive thank you to my channel members and Patreon supporters. You are the backbone of this work. Want to join the crew? Hit the join button below or swing by Patreon. I'd love to have you. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you in the next one.